We talked about the difference between the rapture and the second coming. We're not going to, you know, go through this, but just keep in mind that the rapture is when Jesus comes in the air, and the second coming is when he comes back to earth. Okay, so there's a big difference between the two.
Welcome to Anchored in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Institute of Biblical Studies, author and pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. This is Sonia Hall, thanking you for joining us for the first half of The Rapture, Part 3. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the first half of The Rapture, Part 3.
All right, we're going to finish today dealing with the rapture. All right, so the rapture is when Jesus comes back for his bride, the church, and that will be followed by 7 years of tribulation, a period known as the tribulation. The word rapture, again, is not in the Bible. It actually comes from a Latin word, which means to be caught up or snatched away. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 13 through 18, we see the concept of the rapture. It says that we will be caught up to meet the Lord in the air. And the word caught up actually is the Greek word harpazo, which means to seize or to catch up or to pluck out. So again, the word rapture is not in the Bible, but the concept is all through the scripture. We said there are four aspects of the rapture: coming back, coming out, coming up, and coming together. So those are the four aspects. Jesus comes back, the dead come out of the graves, the saints who are alive are come up, and then we all come together in heaven. Two views. Some people, premillennialists, which is a camp that I put myself in, you know, we believe in the rapture. We expect the rapture, but there are two other groups, the amillennial and the postmillennial, and they don't believe that there's going to be a rapture. So they just believe Jesus will come back, and that's it. There's not going to be a rapture. Key passages: John 14, 1 through 3, 1 Corinthians 15, 54, 51 through 54, 1 Thessalonians 4, 13 through 18, three key passages on the rapture. Old Testament types of the rapture: Noah, his family was taken out of the world and put in the ark, and they were saved from judgment. And so Christ will take us out of the world before the tribulation, and we will be spared from the judgment. And so Noah was taken out of his day. And now the thing that makes this a type to remember is that Jesus said that as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the Son of Man. When he comes back, it's going to be just like that. So Noah and his family were taken out of the world, out of judgment, and they were saved. And then the other example is Lot. Lot and his daughters were taken out of Sodom and Gomorrah before it was judged. So though Noah and Lot are two types of the rapture. We talked about the difference between the rapture and the second coming. We're not going to, you know, go through this, but just keep in mind that the rapture is when Jesus comes in the air, and the second coming is when he comes back to earth. Okay, so there's a big difference between the two. All right, then we looked at the events of the rapture, step-by-step events. We looked at that in detail last week. Now, I do like this. Let me just hit this again. The last trump, right? Jesus said at the last trump, when the last trumpet sounds, remember, you know, we talked about the Feast of Trumpets, and that they sounded the shofar 100 times. And then when the last trump, the last sound, the 100th time, that's when the feast began. All right. But no one knew when the feast was going to begin until they heard the last trump. All right, so that concept comes out of there. Powerful teaching. Here's where we want to start today. We want to start with the history of the rapture. Now, I'm going to pretty much go through the notes, and I don't have my notes before me, so I'm gonna have to go from memory. But you guys have the notes, so if I miss something, you can bring it out. So I'll just so you have the details. You have all the in-depth details of the history of the rapture. All right. The problem is that many people believe that the church never taught the rapture. They say that the church never said anything about a rapture, and that we really didn't hear about the rapture until the 1900s. And before that, there was no mention of a rapture. Well, you know, you got some big problems there. And I'll tell you, you know, one of my favorite Bible teachers believes that this theory, that there's no rapture and that the church never taught that there would be a rapture. The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, one of my favorite Bible teachers, love that guy. But he says that there's no rapture and that the church never taught a rapture. But you know, you got some serious problems with that, because when you look at the Bible, and we've looked at the verses, John 14, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 1 Corinthians 15, you know, it speaks of a rapture. It talks about a catching away, a snatching up, going to the Father's house, Jesus coming back to take us away. So the Bible definitely teaches the concept of a rapture. How can you get around it? Now, I'll tell you how. Some of those verses that that we use, they spiritualize them, and they'll say, well, you know, this is symbolic. You know, it's not meant to be taken literal. You know, it's symbolic, or they'll say that it refers to another point in time. So they explain those verses away. But how do you read those verses and not walk away with the concept that the Bible teaches the rapture? So the Apostle Paul, he taught the rapture in 1 Corinthians 15 and 1 Thessalonians 4. John, the apostle, the one who leaned on the breast of Jesus in John 14, he recorded the rapture. So So the apostles believed that there was a rapture. Now, even a common greeting back in the early church, you know how the Jewish people would greet each other, shalom, and that word shalom meant peace, right? So they would greet each other shalom when they were coming, right? Shalom. And then when they were departing, when they were leaving one another's company, they would use that term shalom, right? And it was a greeting, and it was the way the Jewish people greeted each other. Well, in the early church, they had a common greeting, and the common greeting was Maranatha. And the word Maranatha actually could mean he came or he's coming, right? So in the context of how they were using it, you know, it could have meant he came, right? But when we look at the context, it more often means he's coming, that and he's coming again, right? So a common greeting in the early church was the idea that, hey, Jesus is coming again. Jesus is coming again, and they look forward to the coming of Christ. All right. So, you know, that was so the apostles, you know, they spoke of the rapture. The early church, they looked for Jesus. Remember, in Acts chapter 1, where Jesus was taken up into heaven from this earth. We call that the ascension. And two angels stood by, or it says two men in white apparel, that they stood by whenever Jesus was taken into heaven. And they said, "You men of Galilee, why stand you here gazing at the stars? This same Jesus who was taken up from you will come again in like manner." And so the apostles on that day, when they saw Jesus taken up, they were looking for him to come again. They were anticipating Jesus coming again. So the term Maranatha, you know, and some people use the term Maranatha to mean come quickly. You know, when you remember that song, "One Day at a Time," right? "One day at a time, sweet Jesus, that's all I'm asking from you. Lord, give me the strength to do every day what I have to do." And there's a line in that song that says, "Jesus, you know, as you look here below, that is worse now than then." It's worse, you know, things are a lot worse now than they were then. And so the mantra that we should have, I mean, again, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to going into our new building and, you know, anticipating that. But you know what? I'll be honest with you. If Jesus was to come, I wouldn't be mad. I wouldn't be mad that I didn't get a chance to go into that new building. As much as I'm looking forward to it, I'm looking forward more to the blessed hope. I'm looking forward to that time when Jesus is coming back again. And you know, we call that the blessed hope. You know, in the church, that's what's known as the blessed hope, when Jesus comes back again. And so, you know, we thank God for the fact that he is coming again. All right. Now, let's look at some of the early church fathers. And, you know, again, you have this in your notes. So I'm not going to, other than this one guy, Ephraim the Syrian. I want to talk about him under the church fathers. But you see that the church fathers, and when we say the church fathers, you know, we meant the leaders in the church throughout the history of the church, that the church fathers believed in a rapture. They actually believed in a rapture. And now look at this guy. He was a church father. His name was Ephraim the Syrian. He lived in the 4th century AD. He was a theologian, a writer, and a hymnologist. Look at some of the quotes. Now, again, people will tell us in the history of the church, it didn't talk about the rapture. Nowhere in the church did the church fathers talk about a rapture. You know, people were silent. And it was not until the 19th century that we started hearing about a rapture. Well, listen to some of the quotes by Ephraim the Syrian. "For the elect shall be gathered prior to the tribulation." Okay, the elect, who is that? That's the church. "Prior to the tribulation," that's the time of wrath. So he's talking about a rapture. He says, "When we see the saints in glory flying off in light in the clouds of the air to meet Christ, King of glory." That sounds like a church father talking about the rapture to me. Another quote, "Indeed, the grace of God strengthens and rejoices the hearts of the righteous, and they shall," look at this, "be seized up in the clouds to meet him." They shall be caught up in the clouds. It says, "Count us worthy, Lord." Oh, listen to this. "Of the rapture of the righteous when they meet you in the clouds, that we might not be tried by the bitter and inexorable judgment." All right. And then let me read this last one. He says, "Let us pray the Lord in great humility that he will take us out from the coming fear and count us worthy that the rapture, when the righteous are raptured in the clouds to meet the Lord, the King of glory. Now, let me ask you something, saints. Is this or is this not evidence that the church fathers believed in the rapture? And yet and still we got people telling us that y'all, you don't hear about any rapture till the 18th, 19th century. You don't hear about it till then. Nothing is said about it. Where are they doing their research at? All right. Replacement theology. And what replacement theology is, it says that Israel has been replaced by the church. That when you read all the stuff about Israel in the Old Testament, it says that all the stuff that talks about Israel and all the promises to Israel have been replaced by the church. And so this was the teaching, you know, at the time, this was the teaching of the Catholic Church. They taught replacement theology. And because they were amillennialists, they didn't believe in a rapture. So the replacement theology people, because they didn't believe in a rapture, they didn't say anything about it. They suppressed. And as a matter of fact, anybody that said anything about the rapture, they suppressed it. And so this was the dominant voice, you know, throughout the Middle Ages. And so no wonder we don't hear a lot about the rapture. And one reason is because it was suppressed, that the leadership in the church didn't believe in it. And again, I'm saying primarily the Catholic Church, because they were the dominant voice. They were amillennialists. They didn't believe in the rapture, so they suppressed it. They didn't say anything about it. And again, anybody that said anything, you know, they tried to put them down. They tried to discredit them. Then we see there was a resurgence of the rapture with the Reformation. You know, when Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses and rebelled against, or should I say, put out reforms against the Catholic Church. All right. And then at that point, people started coming forward, with their teaching of the rapture. So there was a resurgence of the rapture teaching during the Reformation. All right. And then that's when we come into John Nelson Darby. And this is what people who oppose the rapture, they say, well, you don't hear anything about the rapture till John Nelson Darby. And he got it from some girl who was demon possessed, right? And so that's the big thing. So if you listen to these guys, if you listen to these people who say there's not going to be a rapture, they say, well, it didn't start until John Nelson Darby, you know, who was, I believe a pastor, theologian. And they say that he was the first one that popularized it. And he actually got it from a demon possessed girl in Scotland. So I got all that in your notes. So you got an advantage that you got the notes. I didn't print off my notes. So you got an advantage. You can read more. I'm trying to do the best I can from my memory. Now, even the thing with this demon possessed girl, who they say that Darby got the whole teaching of the rapture from. If you read her, if you read some stuff that was recorded about her, watch this. She believed that the church was going through the tribulation. So how did Darby get his stuff from a demon-possessed teenage girl, right? If she believed that the church was going through the tribulation, she didn't believe the church was going to be raptured out. So again, saints, that's why I love to study. I love digging this kind of stuff out here. They say, well, you know, Darby was the one who started teaching it. And then Scofield, if you have a Scofield Bible, I have a Scofield Bible. I cut my teeth on Scofield. When I got saved, somebody gave me a Scofield Bible, Scofield Reference Bible. And so Scofield talks about the rapture in his notes. And they say that Darby was the one who started teaching the rapture. And then Scofield was the one who popularized it when he put it in his Bible. And so they argue that Well, you know, you don't really hear about any rapture teaching until Darby and Schofield. But again, saints, I've just shown you that that's a lie. That's not true. The rapture has always been present. You know, it's always been around, even though it was suppressed at one point by church leadership that didn't accept the rapture. They suppressed it, but yet and still, it was still there. It never went away. It's just that it didn't have the prominence at certain times that it always had. So I wanted to give you that because, again, as I teach on the rapture, everybody doesn't believe that there's going to be a rapture. Okay, so, you know, that's the first thing I want you to know. So I don't want you to be out there, you know, thinking that just because somebody is a Christian and or say they love the Lord, that they're going to believe like you believe and believe that there's a rapture. So I want to let you know that there's probably a good majority of people out there, Christians, that don't believe the rapture. So again, that's the reason that I taught the history of the rapture. All right. Now, what about date setting and the rapture? What about date setting and the rapture? You know, there, I remember, and some of you may remember this, there was a book, and I got it somewhere. It's in my library somewhere. I just didn't pull it up. The title of the book is 88 Reasons Why Jesus is Coming Back in 1988. All right. And that was a pretty popular book back in the day. So guess what happened when Jesus didn't come back in 1988? They said, well, he's coming back in 1989. And then he didn't come back in 1989. So what did they say? You know, many people like the Jehovah Witnesses say he came back spiritually, right? That he might not have came back physically or literally, but he came back spiritually. So, you know, again, once you start promoting that narrative that he's coming back, or, you know, and there's people today, you know, that say they know exactly when Jesus is coming back. And so they try to, you know, give a time. And then when he don't come back, cause the Jehovah Witnesses, who was it, Russell, you know, he believed that Jesus was coming back. And then when Jesus didn't come back, he said that, well, he came back spiritually, right? So again, you know, you have to continue to promote that narrative. So, you know, I would say this, you know, if somebody tells you that they know when Jesus is coming back, then, you know, I would stop listening to them because they're a false prophet, right? Because look what Jesus said in Matthew 24 and verse 36, but of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Jesus said, no one knows. And in one place, he said, not even the Son. So I think I talked about that last week, when Jesus came on this earth, that there were times that he chose not to know things. You know, he submitted his omniscience to the Father. And again, he didn't stop being God. You know, it's just like, if you're a millionaire, right, and you got millions of dollars in the bank, if it's just say, well, you know, you're going out and you're buying a car, and just say you buy, and I'm just throwing this out, just say you buy a hoopty, right, for $100. Well, you know, you could have bought a top of the line car. Why? Because you got $1 million. You know, I mean, you're a millionaire. You got millions of dollars in the bank. But what did you do? You chose not to use. Oh.
Thank you for joining us today on In Kirk and Jesus. Tune in next time for the conclusion of The Rapture Part 3. If you would like to request an audio copy of today's message, The Rapture Part 3, you can contact us at inkirkandjesus.org. Request The Rapture Part 3. That's inkirkandjesus.org and request The Rapture Part 3. from our Bible Prophecy Series, 315060. Keep in mind, the entire series on Bible Prophecy is made available by request. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Glaze. Dr. Glaze is the author of 10 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, visit anchoredinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. Now for Dr. Glaze and our volunteer staff, I'm Sonia Hall reminding you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.